I am Kur of the House of Lunkij, commander of the Dark Moon Fleet. With me tonight are my two co-hosts.
I am Jorn of House Vampyr, the XO of the Phoenix Rising.
I am Javan of the House Dongying, Shonche, CEO of the Crimson Fury.
Klingonbach.
Welcome to the Keg Podcast. Today, we have a special episode where we talk about props with our guest, Katamok Vista Lunkij. I'm sorry if I pronounced that wrong, but he is Daniel McNerima, owner of the Black Diamond Arsenal. And I really loved this podcast. I was really excited to talk about props for an hour. And I look forward in the future to hopefully having Daniel back to talk about some of the processes in a lot more detail rather than a broad, overarching discussion of just prop making in general. Enjoy.
Well, why do you want props?
What are props good for?
I can start with that. When it comes to costuming in general, need to call it a costume, a uniform, or cosplay, what a prop does is it helps round out a character. Anybody can wear clothing. The prop sometimes makes the character. If to jump genre a little bit, what is Doctor Who without a sonic screwdriver? What is Data without his tricorder?
Props also allow you to focus that character around something. It gives your hand something to hold so they're not just off to your side or wrapped in front of you, and lets you do something with that character.
On top of that, props don't have to be a handheld thing. If you, one great thing about Star Trek is they have the side pouches for a medical whatnot. In a universe that doesn't believe in pockets, it's a good way to carry stuff.
Or command cloaks, because we've got all kinds of pockets in command cloaks.
There we go.
Yeah, I love my command cloak with all its pockets. It's great.
I've got them on the outside, and then I've got them again on the inside.
Have some of those sneaky pockets where you can, like, you keep your hidden weapons in, flick them out.
Yes, I do. Speaking of weapons, what type of issues do we have to consider when we're thinking about taking a prop weapon? Because we're not going to take live steel. We're not going to take a actual disruptor. What kind of considerations are we going to have to think about when we're going to take these into the public to conventions?
First thing I say is let's define live steel. So when people hear live steel, they think different things. The simplest definition is any metal blade. I need to be sharp or dull. Should be considered live steel. When we go to a convention or we go to an event, even if it's going out to a restaurant, a lot of them don't want you to bring metal weapons, period, in the story. Obviously, disruptors, you don't want to bring. A misfire, that disintegrates a booth. I can't afford a disintegrated booth of items. But back to the, when you look at it, every con and every state and every city has different laws. Number one thing is follow them. Before anything else, you always follow the rules of the convention and you follow the rules of the city you're in.
And you're seeing a lot of cons too these days, especially after the incident in Phoenix, where they're using metal detectors for people to go through, checking their costumes out to make sure that there's no steal of some sort.
Correct. So to give a quick rundown of what happened in Phoenix, that happened due to some person, I don't know his name, I don't even want to publicize his name, even if I knew it, who decided to bring live firearms to a convention with the intent to shoot certain people or to harm certain people, including one of the original Power Rangers. Since then, a lot of conventions have been getting a lot stricter and a lot pickier on what they allow and if they allow any type of props whatsoever now.
But I think, didn't they catch that guy at the door?
Yes, they caught him really early. I guess he made some public posts or something to that degree, but they knew that he was up to no good and the police were able to apprehend him without any issue.
So basically, their security worked.
To a certain degree. I wasn't there, so I can't say if it was based off of their security or based off of other type of internal policing of the costuming community. But yes, somehow he was able to get caught and somehow the security system did work.
So what should we look for to make the props that we want to take, the props that we want to use, how should we make them con safe so they're not going to ruin somebody's day?
I mean, everybody else is welcome to jump in. My first statement is beyond following the rule of the convention. So every convention is different. 95% will say no blades, no metal blades, no steel, nothing like that. Some even get stricter to wood. So first rule always is follow the rules of the convention. Beyond that, when you're making a prop, you're looking at the type of material you're working with. Just because you're supposed to be swinging around a metal bat left doesn't mean it has to be metal for it to look.
It's too easy to take a lot of materials and paint them in a way that you'll get the effect that you want without them actually having to be metal. A lot of the wood props that I make and Mark makes in Chicago there are made out of wood, and they look real, but they're not.
Yeah, so I've actually been stopped based off of when going to a convention with a painted Batleth that was one of Mark's Batleth, and it's brush painted with a type of paint that is just it's made to look like weathered metal, and it does a good job from what's known as a 5-foot rule.
If anybody's looking to find that type of paint, basically it's a spray paint hammered silver, gives you that kind of texture, gives you that kind of colorization.
They also do have a brush run version of that. I'm actually holding it right now in my hand. Both of them, the brand that I'm aware of is named Rust-Oleum, and it will say hammered on. It has something to do with the way that the chemical setup gives it a non-smooth look to it.
If you take a look at the cans, because, yeah, Rust-Oleum is the brand. If you take a look at the cans, metallic silver will look different than the hammered silver. It's the hammered silver that Mark and I like to use.
Correct, and I would agree. If you're looking for a used metal, hammered is the way to go. If you're looking at an item that is supposed to be a clean steel tube, then you're going to look for that metallic silver or one of the other metallic colors.
Well, I guess that brings us into the type of props that one would want to carry. What are the pluses and cons, in your opinion, of carrying a wooden or plastic Batleth?
So the big one is if you're at a convention, definitely if you're looking at like a Comic-Con convention, since we talked about Phoenix 6 Comic-Con, that's a big floor just to walk all day. And if you look at that, something the size of a Batleth, you really don't have a sheath for it. You don't have a sling for it. You're carrying it in your arms for 3-4 hours minimum. That means one of your hands is always taken up. You have to watch where you're walking, how you're walking, so you don't bust your neighbor in your head. And it just becomes, it can become cumbersome and in the way, if you want to put it that way, to carry around all day long.
Anytime you're dealing with a prop that's that big, and let's face it, a Batleth is 4 foot long, you have to be really cognizant of the area around you because it is too easy to run into something with that. We normally have an idea in our mind of ourselves and to bump into as we go through life. But when you add something that big to your area, you may not notice that you're banging into things.
Another prime example of that is your field of vision. What we are used to as our field of vision, I can almost guarantee if I'm walking around on a normal day, I could half pay attention and still make sure I don't hit my shoulder on something. A common piece of my prosthetics is an eye patch, similar to General Martok's. I can tell you right now, the first time I wore that, I ran into half the crowd that I at the convention I was at. A prop works in the same way. It extends your body, extends where you're used to walking, and you will run into somebody or you will accidentally hit somebody as you're swinging in a corner too quickly.
Yeah, another thing to take into account with a prop you have to carry all day is definitely the weight too, because like we're just talking about Batleths now, but once you get into other props, just making something heavy and yeah, you don't have a way to sling it, you're going to be carrying that thing all day in your hands.
Or even worse, things like,
I mean, you're going to set it down and forget it.
Even things like disruptor rifles and pistols, I mean, that maybe have slings or in holsters, those get in the way. You sit down in one of those chairs and it's got the small arms and you've got this gun on your hip and you got to move it over and put it somewhere else and then it's going to be poking into you, or you've got a Batleth and you're sitting down, where do you put it? On the table, it takes up all the space. On the floor, someone could pinch it. You know, there's so much that you have to worry about when you bring large things around with you.
So now the other thing, and I'm sure that almost every one of you guys can contest to it, you have that disruptor in a sling. You swing around too quickly and it flies and hits you somewhere you don't want to be hit.
Yep.
Yeah, I recommend, like, when you're at conventions, the props you want to take are the ones that you can put in your pockets and that you can take out, or you can pin to you or attach to yourself in some way, and they're not going to move around uncontrollably or get in the way kind of thing.
Now, we have been talking about the cons a lot here. There are a ton of pros of having these. Definitely if you're at a smaller convention, I'm going to use Starbase Indy as an example, where you can run up to your room and get back down to the convention floor in 10 minutes flat on something you don't have to carry around all day. Having that Batleth with you, or having that disruptor with you, or the mech less or whatever, Damer Than Photo is so much better.
Like I said earlier, they give you a focal point that your character can express emotion to the photo with.
They're a great thing to keep at your CAG table or something like that, or your headquarters, wherever it may be at the convention, so that when people come up, you can pull them out and make those great photos, but you don't have to wander around with it all the time.
Unless you're doing an honor guard. But then again, if you're doing that, you're not wandering around all the time, just a specific event. It can go back to the supply depot or whatever you want to call it.
Correct. So basically, it turns into a, they're great for photos. They're great to round out a character, but they become cumbersome after a while to carry around with. So make sure you have a plan that you're able to put them down safely if they become too much.
And we'll probably be covering that when we get to a ship's activities podcast sometime in the future. But yeah, a command and control table, or what's the word I'm looking for? Central location for your club at the convention would be a great place to do that.
Correct. So smaller conventions, that's a lot easier because usually you can get to your hotel room and back in 10 minutes. But if you're looking at, let's say, Dragon Con or a convention that you're looking at a huge crowd, you're likely not going to be able to get to your hotel room and back to the convention in a reasonable amount of time without you losing an hour of the convention.
MegaCon down here in the Orlando area is one of those really big cons. And the day we did a Klingon day at MegaCon, I carried a Datag knife with me, but I had that in a sheath strapped in a way that it wasn't going to swing any way, shape, or form, because I knew I had no safety hatch I could go to and get rid of things.
So we did mention a couple different Klingon weapons here.
Well, one thing I like to recommend to people is there's a website out there called the Imperial Klingon Weapons Guild, and they put out a magazine every so often called the Mupwit, which is, you know, the hammer. And they've got dimensions and diagrams of all kinds of different Klingon weapons. And it's great because I can just download the image, run it out to the right size on my printer, and I've got a template to go cut this baby out of wood.
Oh, nice. That's something that I can definitely use.
They even have like plans for how to make a Datag with the blade that moves. Like they have like internal diagrams for how to do the hinges.
They're geared towards making metal weapons. So it's just using their pictures is what I'm doing to get the wooden ones. And that's pretty much how you can get any of these. You can get the batleth. You can go find a picture of a batleth that you like, blow it up to 4 feet, print it out in sections, tape the sections to get out. You've got a pattern that you can trace under a sheet of plywood and cut out with a saber saw.
Yeah, or a jigsaw.
So now going into tools, the big thing about prop making in general are tools. And there's a section later for that. And one thing I want to bring up is prop making does not have to be expensive to get into. We'll mention tools that cost $10,000 on this podcast because there are ways of doing it. But one thing that is like almost every city has is a local makerspace.
Find them.
The makerspace works together so that it's a group effort to buy that $10,000 tool so you don't have to.
They just started putting makerspaces, in the case of Omaha, called DoSpace. DoSpace put in a vinyl cutter because a vinyl cutter is cheap, several 3D printers, and what everybody was using was the laser cutter, which is one of those $10,000 pieces of equipment.
We don't have a makerspace in Kingston. Well, we did, but they closed up because they didn't have enough interest. But what I've been doing is I've been finding tools off Kijiji that people have just been getting rid of cheaply. Like I got a scroll saw for like $50.
Check your libraries too. Some of the libraries today are getting 3D printers that patrons can use.
Correct. Now, of course, any type of online shopping for used tools, it's a buy at your own risk kind of thing. But I have got tools. I got a scroll saw for like $20. And when I looked online, it's like a $500 scroll saw. So sometimes you make out really well. But again, it's a make sure you do your research ahead of time, though.
Make sure you test it first. If they won't let you test it, there's probably something wrong with it.
Well, if I'm selling you a scroll saw here in Orlando and you're up in Canada, I don't know that your arms are long enough to test it.
Yeah, but if you're buying off of Kijiji, you usually don't ship with that. You go to the person's house and pick it up.
Is that like Canadian Craigslist?
I guess so. I didn't know you guys didn't have Kijiji up there.
Well, I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah, I never heard of that before.
Oh, yeah, it's like a Craigslist. Just, I don't know how Craigslist is in the States, but it's just a little bit harder to use, and Kijiji's a little bit more user-friendly.
Yeah, any one of these are basically...
Well, one of the things you might look for
is that it's a yard sale concept. They make a post saying that they're selling X, Y, or Z, and you're basically have the option to contact them to see if you want to purchase it. Every city, state, country... would may have something different, but in the United States, it's called Craigslist.
Also, Facebook, a lot of Facebook yard sale groups are popping up where people just post stuff, kind of like Kijiji or Craigslist, where somebody just posts the ad, how much it is, and then you just message them directly.
There are some places throughout the country that are selling brand new tools at discount closeouts. They got to get rid of them. Prices like Harbor Freight.
Or I don't know how it is down the States, but Father's Day is the time just leading up to Father's Day is also a good time to buy tools. They usually have pretty good sales around that time. Or
yeah.
Season changing, like Christmas time just before the winter is also a good time because not a lot of people buy tools then, or they're trying to get rid of stock in the new year, stuff like that.
So one thing mentioned for, and I don't know if Harbor Freight is international or just U.S.-based. For anybody who doesn't know what Harbor Freight is, it is basically the... discount store for tools. They do have some great tools. I actually own quite a few Harbor Freight tools that have lasted me ages. Then I've also had some that have lasted me months. So Harbor Freight tools are not considered high quality tools, but they are extremely discounted compared to what you will find at a average tool shop.
But by the same token, keep an eye out on their prices, because I've seen some of the tools being sold at the warehouse hardware stores at a similar price.
Yes, correct. You always want to do your research when it comes to pricing and quality of an item.
And a big point here, too, is when you buy a tool, when you're using a tool, find ways that you can use it for multiple things. Don't be forced to just use the tool for what they say you can do. I put edges on all my bladed weapons, wooden ones, using a belt sander. I can get a nice curve going on them because the belt sander is a loop. And the top of the belt sander has a nice loopy thing that I can go ahead and use to get those edges on them.
Yeah, and with that, more for a disclaimer than anything, a belt sander is made to be used that way, like he explained. Do not use a tool like, do not use a crowbar as a hammer, for example. It's dangerous and it can hurt you. Yes, I'm sure that 95% of us have used something like that, but still, it's good to put out there. There's a difference from using a tool how it should be used and using a tool completely against the rails.
Yeah, kind of the same token, like I have a jigsaw and I do a lot of cutting with it. But there, one thing I've really found out kind of in the last 6 months is there's special blades for special tools. Like up until a couple weeks ago, I didn't know there was a scroll saw blade for a jigsaw so that you can make tighter turns with it.
And if you can find out what those special blades are and get them put into your scroll saw, you can do a lot better stuff with it. It's really hard to cut plastic with a scroll saw, mainly because as soon as you start cutting it, as soon as you've gotten past the place where you've cut, it's starting to cool down. It's melted in the first place, so starting to cool down and sealing itself up again right behind you.
Yeah, like with scroll saws too, there's tons of different blades as well. Like there's an omnidirectional one, which is kind of like a spiral. So you can, it's easier to make, to do like very wavy wave lines or turn back on yourself, or a regular one. There's like a few tricks to do it, but they can be a little bit harder if you don't have an omnidirectional one. But those ones break easier too.
Yeah, in the same aspect, you have a lot of different style saws. They're mentioning a scroll saw. How that works is it goes, there's a blade that goes up and down very quickly. Now, you also have a bandsaw, which is one big blend of blades that spin. So that gives you a lot smoother of a cut where the jigsaw may vibrate stuff. So if you're working with a lighter material, such as EVA foam or something like that, scroll saws shred it, whereas a bandsaw keeps it smooth. So you also want to take into consideration how the tool works for the job you're doing.
Yeah, well, addressing that point about vibrating, anytime you're doing a cut on a piece of wood or whatever, you need to make sure that the thing you're cutting is securely fastened down somehow, securely held in place, because the more you can dampen down those vibrations, the better the cut's going to be, the quicker the cut's going to be, and the safer the cut's going to be.
Yeah, and if anybody buys a scroll saw, the blade wanders. So it is a trickier one to use. where a bandsaw, the blade's thicker, so it'll always stay straight. So if you're just looking for like straight cuts, a bandsaw would be better.
So this goes back to knowing your tool. Everybody's going to have a learning curve, but knowing your tool is key for safety. Last thing you want to do is lose a thumb. It's key for getting the right cuts because that maple that you're using might not be the cheapest thing out there.
Yeah, it's good to, like when you first buy a tool, maybe take on a very, like a easy project. Like with any of these, just try to make a bat lift or a mech lift just to play with it. Your first one, you're probably going to throw away, but you know what the tool does afterwards.
Correct.
Get some scraps, make some cuts. See what it can do.
That is one thing that I still struggle with sometimes. It's like I said, up until like a week or so ago, I didn't know that they made scroll saw blades for the jigsaw so I can make tighter turns with it. So that's just, I'm still learning how to use my jigsaw.
Yeah, so I actually went out, because I do a lot of things with EVA foam for outside of Klingon stuff, so heavy armor, stuff like that. I use a bandsaw. I went out and bought a special blade just for foam because it has more teeth and creates a smoother cut. So there's a lot of things you learn about. We're using saws here for cutting because it's a good, easy, simple thing to talk about. But no matter what tool you're using, make sure you know how it works. A heat gun, for example, which is almost a need for any prop shop. If you're working on props, buy a heat gun. They're cheap, they work, and they're great.
And it's no substitute for a hairdryer if you're working at home.
A hairdryer is no substitute for a heat gun.
But a nice thing about a heat gun is a lot of the molds that I use for doing resin casting are flat. But if I want a belt buckle that's got a curve to it, I can take and I can cast a flat belt buckle, take the heat gun, heat that resin back up, and I can put a curve into it.
Yeah.
Correct. There's a ton of uses for a heat gun.
I bought one when I made a lot of foam armor. When I was just kind of, again, doing it, I was just making armor. A lot of it I ended up throwing out because I didn't like the end product. But, you know, it's a part of that. Just buy some, experiment with it. And odds are the first thing that you make, you're probably going to throw out, but you're going to learn from it.
So, yeah. Also, that is one key thing. The best piece of advice I can give for any prop maker. Your first piece will likely be junk. It's not a bad thing, but it's because you're learning. That first drawing you made as a little baby is nothing compared to what you can do now if you're an artist. Everybody starts somewhere. Don't give up because you have one piece that doesn't look like you want it.
To give you an idea of what he's talking about, the rule of thumb on being an author or writing, you need to write 1,000,000 words before you find your voice, your style, and how your writing is going to flow.
Even to this day, what I do for a living is actually make props. I still throw out probably a quarter of the stuff I make because it's just not what I want. I'm sure that when you get into people who work with wood, the wood batless, I'm sure that you're fine that they throw out pieces. Oh crap, I slipped, kind of comment. I messed that piece up. Whoops, I messed that piece up.
Oh yeah, I got a whole box of scrap wood thrown out because I screwed something up. And it's not just like making props. It's just regular woodworking for around the house. Working on my deck, I've threw out 5 pieces today.
So don't get discouraged because of that. That's a big one. It's just don't get discouraged over that. It will happen.
Learn from what your mistake was. Improve your techniques with every cut, with everything you're doing. Just keep working it and you will get to where you like what you've done.
And put the research into, like, Evil Ted is, if you want to do foam work, I should say, Evil Ted is a great reference because he has a lot of great ideas. And I use a lot in my foam work now because a lot of his ideas are just solid ideas.
Evil Ted?
So anybody who doesn't know who Evil Ted Smith is, Evil Ted Smith is a professional prop maker. He actually works in Hollywood a lot. But he does a YouTube channel. He's not specifically Klingon-based. He's just props in general, even though he has worked on Star Trek. But I consider myself a professional prop maker. This guy makes me look like a 2-year-old painting compared to Picasso. So when he does these free YouTube videos where you can learn something from, watch him. He's a great one. There's another group out there that does videos called Punish Props. I would definitely recommend both of them.
Oh, yeah, they do great stuff, too. I watch a lot of their stuff, too.
Well, let's make sure we get links to these sites when we get this podcast posted.
Links will be included on the podcast page when it appears on CAG.org. Be sure to check the links below.
Ooh.
Fancy.
We've got to have some commercial announcements.
Hey, we can edit it all later. It doesn't matter.
We'll get it all in editing.
We'll fix it in post-production.
This episode brought to you by the Kalos Blah fields of blah blah blah. I don't know. I'm out of it.
That's all right. We'll get an editing.
And it doesn't have to be wood either. Just wood either when you're making props. Pain sticks. We use pain in the Midwest, in the Des Moines area. We were using pain sticks made out of PVC tubing and a joy buzzer so that we'd have a weapon available for when we're doing jail and bails. It wasn't nearly as threatening as the edged weapons were.
I have a couple of pain sticks on the wall. They're made out of aluminium pipe and lighting fixtures, like fixtures from the inside of lights to look like the end piece, and then various different kind of buttons and stuff glued on. I don't know where half the pieces came from.
But I think that gets us into,
for your American users, he said aluminum.
Which I think gets us into the concept here of, do you want a prop that's screen accurate, like Chris just described, something that you can just use in cosplay? The PVC tubes with connectors on the end and the joy buzzer is very hard to break. And if it does break, very easy to replace. The aluminum tubes with all that circuitry, man, I wouldn't want to risk
it. Oh, there's no circuitry. It's just a hollow tube with things glued to it. It's not. When I said light fixture, I mean it has like pieces from the inside of lights attached to the end of it to make it look like it's got a thing on it. It's like they ripped apart light fixtures to take out the internal pieces to make it look cool, but it doesn't actually do anything.
Actually, the ones that JP created, which were turned aluminum and all that stuff, did have electronics in them.
Oh, okay. No, mine don't have any electronics in them. I've seen his. His are like you push a button and it glows and lights up or something. It's pretty cool.
It is very cool, yes. But we don't use those when we go arrest people for the jail and bail. We arrest people using the PVC pipes.
Right. That with the joy buzzer, you can actually poke them and be like, bzz, 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 and it's kind of funny. And they go, oh, ow, ooh. And you get a laugh from the crowd or whatever that's building up while you're trying to arrest this person.
Exactly.
So, with that, you mentioned cosplay compared to screen accurate. Now, I want to point something out. A screen accurate costume or screen accurate prop, half the time, unless it is the main focal point of the shot, is pretty low quality and is only made to survive 20 to 30 seconds of filming before they have to possibly do a repair on it.
Are you trying to tell me that the original series Klingons were using bubble wrap for their belt buckles?
Exactly. So
we should all be using bubble wrap for our belt buckles. Isn't that the best thing to make belt buckles out of? Cardboard and bubble wrap and some spray paint.
So now
we have to make them every week.
Yep, you just make a whole sheet of bubble wrapped cardboard and just sit there cutting it up, and there you go.
So speaking about that, when we are looking at doing a prop, cosplay props and cosplay costumes, or costuming, whatever term you want to use there, because I know some people are picky about what term they use, are usually higher quality, at least in build, than what you will see on a show. It's the whole joke that Godzilla has a zipper in the back. That was made because nobody was supposed to see the back of Godzilla.
That's correct. I got a chance one time to see the original Robin costume from the TV series. And it's basically a t-shirt with grommet holes put into it and a shoestring wrapped on it. But it looked good on television.
Yeah. On episode one of Star Wars, the communicator that Qui-Gon Jinn used was an old woman's razor.
I can believe that. The code cylinders that they used throughout Star Wars were radiation detectors that they have over in Europe.
How did you know that razor belonged to an old woman? What were you doing to find out that razor belonged to an old woman? That's what I...
Do you really want to know?
He works for the National Enquirer. Of course he wants to know.
This thing was very...
My friendly friend told me.
It was just very funny, though. It was specifically an old woman's razor. Not just a woman's razor, specifically an old woman's razor. Razor?
No, as in a razor that is no longer produced.
Oh, okay, I get it.
So, now, I think tricorders for the medical tricorders, the scanners, were actually salt and pepper shakers, if I'm not mistaken, from Star Trek, so...
In the original series, yeah.
So, we see all this stuff, and we try to reproduce it. Need to be through a lot of different materials we'll go over later. A lot of times, on the TV show, and I do the same thing, I have a scrap bin downstairs, which is a big... plastic tub filled with random pieces. Anything from, I have a weather vane from a skyscraper from downtown Cincinnati. I have So I have random bolts and nuts that just look weird. I have caps from ice cream. I have caps from sodas. Anything that may look neat, I have like two or three bags of googly eyes because they make good rivets after they're painted. So don't think that you have to use this very specific, very like pre-made item at times. Sometimes you can get away with the coolest props by using scraps laying around your house.
Scratch-built stuff is a lot of fun to build because you can just go crazy as well. You don't have to worry about limitations from... It's more like building a collage than it is building a prop.
And they talk about, too, costumers should go to thrift stores, Goodwills, whatever, and just start looking for shapes. Because you can do just about anything you want if you can find something that's close to the shape you're looking
for. Dollar Tree is good for that too.
It's like how they in Enterprise, we were talking about this earlier, in Enterprise, the Klingon Disruptor was made out of a sprayer for the end of a hose that someone found at a store and spray painted and cut off some bits. The props are just made from random stuff. So if you just want something that looks similar, doesn't have to be identical, you can also do the same thing. You can just find something that looks like something and go, oh, here, I'm going to cut off these bits, stick on some stuff, spray paint it, bam, you've got yourself a disruptor or a phaser or whatever else you want.
There's people who their whole concept of having fun is finding out what something was used to make it. You can find descriptions, detailed descriptions on items, on websites like the replica prop forms, and which a link will be below, the RPF and websites like that. And even on CAG's website and through the Facebook groups, you will find just where people take the time to detail and take real up close photos of these items and say, and it shows how they were made. And you'd be surprised how many times the plastic gems that you see at that craft store are used for that button or like something that from a distance you never notice. But when it's up close, you go, well, huh.
If you're looking for a blood wine mug, one of the ones they actually used on the show was a metal measuring cup, quart size, I believe. Sure. Another one, another even cheaper way to do it, to get that ridged shape that some of the ceramic ones that they had, is you go to a 7-Eleven or some sort of convenience store, buy a can of Gatorade. It has the ribbing sides and the indentation, and you can cut off the top, smooth it off, sterilize it, paint it. You got yourself a Budweiser mug.
I do want to bring something up about that. Most plastics that they use now in bottles for Gatorade, waters, and stuff like that, if anybody ever wonders why there is an expiration date on bottles of water, is because the plastic is actually biodegradable. They are not meant to be refilled over and over. While they may look great for one or two, be careful and research the material that you are using, definitely if it's going to be for something edible or to hold water or food on. Last thing you need is to get something that's actually going to poison.
Well, I'd worry more about the paints that you may use to color it than the actual plastic itself. Check, you can look on the bottom of a plastic thing and see what the plastic it's made out of is.
That is correct. And I will say that, because I've done that for a display before, and the cups turn out great, but the paints I used, I would never have somebody drink out of it. So make sure that you're always cautious on what paints you're using, what materials you're using, and all that, just to make sure that you're not going to do something that's going to make you sick later.
If you're looking for a good display Budweiser bottle, they use Jose Cuervo margarita mix. Jose Cuervo.
Yeah, I have a bottle upstairs, actually, that's all washed and ready to be turned into a Budweiser bottle.
Now, I will say that they have stopped using that style. They still have a very similar style. They stopped using the exact same model. They have changed it, and I think they now use plastic and a couple other things. So there is a couple differences now.
Right. They don't use the glass ones. And it was specifically the like strawberry margarita mix or something like that was the one that I would always get. Because you could turn the inside mixture into some kind of blood wine if you wanted to. But yeah, they now it's all in plastic bottles. They don't have it in the glass bottles like they used to. If you're lucky and you can find it.
And if you can find the mini kegs of Heineken or another brand of beer, those can be turned into display Budweiser kegs.
Oh, the little mini kegs. Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen some. I think someone posted instructions for something like that.
At one point, John Miller was looking for as many as he could get his hands on to turn into kegs.
Okay, maybe he posted instructions. It may be in a Mind Scanner, I think. I'll have to double check.
If we find that, that'll be in the description below.
But Mind Scanner is always a good place to go to see what people are talking about on how to make props and all kinds of stuff.
So most of the props we've been talking about have been like weapon props or something we hold. What other kind of things would you consider props? What other type of costume accessories, if you want to call it that?
Well, basically, yeah, just about all the costume accessories that you have to create for your uniforms, which are the belt buckles, the grenades, data rods, greebles, whatever you want to call them, the chest buckle or the clips for the pauldrons, your holsters. If you're doctoring your boots, you've got props that go on to make the boots into what they are, medals, rank pins, honorifics, the honor sash itself.
So with these accessories, you have your basic costume. If you want to go, let's say, next generation era, you have your striped vest, you have your pants, and you have your forehead. That would be a basic uniform. Then you would upgrade it by getting things like a belt buckle with a belt that goes over it. Then maybe add them grenade pins and then rank pins. And so what in my opinion, these do is make you go from just another background Klingon to looking like you're the main character of that episode.
Basically, they add a story to the character you're doing.
And speaking of rank pins, they're available on CAG.org. You can just download them by going to the rank page and clicking on the pin that you want to get. It's a 3D printable version of them, that is.
So yeah. You can take that file to a 3D printer and print out the pin that you want.
Yep. So you find a library or something like that that has a 3D printer that you can book time on, and they're pretty small, so they don't take a long time to print.
There won't be a link to that. You have to find that yourself.
So the other way around that is if you don't have an access to a 3D printer because you live in a town like that's too small and does not have a local makerspace or a library that has one, you can contact companies or prop makers out there and have them commission them to make them. So, for example, now this is a selfish...
Dan's LinkedIn Mind Scanner.
Yeah. Now, if you ever need a company to print something, you can always go to one. There's this great one out there that happened to be owned by me that's named Black Diamond Arsenal. You send them any 3D model that you find, and they'll be happy to print it. On top of that, you also have other companies like Shapeways, things like that you can print from. You usually go into the smaller ones, they're cheaper, but you get more reliability with larger companies like Shapeways. But that's because they're huge, large international companies.
But there's lots of little things that you can work on that you can improve your costumes with and learn new skills. Because a lot of the stuff that goes into making these accessories, you can find some sort of video on YouTube that'll talk about how to do it.
So, yeah, I would say that for your costume and your costume accessories and props, there are basically two or three ways of doing it. The first one is to make it yourself. You will get a pride from having your own. The second one is going through a company or a prop builder, such as Black Diamond Arsenal or Punish Props or someone like them. There's a lot of different ones specifically for the Klingon community also that you can go through to get your props and accessories. Third way is to work out a trade with somebody. If you know how to sew, trust me, there's a lot of us prop makers who can't sew for our life. And we would happily do a trade of a sewn item or a prop. So remember, you're not alone out there. Don't think you have to make everything, but don't think that you have to go out and buy it either.
And there's lots of different materials that you can use to make different things. Hustle, do you want to talk about the belt buckles that you made for your costumes out of what was it, foam?
Foam board and bouncy balls that I got from the dollar store. Yeah, basically, I cut out the general shape with a foam board, and then I bought a package of bouncy balls from the dollar store. I think they were literally a dollar. I sliced off, but kind of like a quarter off of each side to a third, and I just glued them down to the foam board. I took some glue, filled the end. Then once you spray that with a rubber spray, like I use something called Leak Seal, but there's probably, I'm not sure if that's just a Canadian brand. You spray it over a couple layers over it, and it looks like you molded it by the time you painted it.
Plasti Dip is a brand you can find out here in the States.
Oh, yeah, that's the really expensive one out here.
See, Leak Seal is more expensive around me than Plasti Dip is. And I believe Rust-Oleum also came out with a recently with a plastic type of spray also.
Yeah, it's Leak Seal by Rust-Oleum.
Yeah, okay.
So Rust-Oleum is a really good brand on the paints because you can often find paint and primer in one with Rust-Oleum.
So now, no matter, we're going to be mentioning brands here. While we may mention two brands, there's 30 out there. So don't be discouraged just because you can't find the brand we're talking about.
Yeah, and Rust-Oleum, I find, tends to have like these sales, at least at the Home Depot where I go to, where it's kind of like buy one, get the second one half off, or they're all just half off. One time I was in there and there was 50% off the Leak Seals. I bought a ridiculous amount.
Oh, lucky you. I would have too. I probably bought them out.
Yeah, I bought like 12 of them. It was silly.
But he's absolutely right. If you can't find the one brand that we've mentioned, there are going to be several other brands of the same stuff that'll give you the same look when you're done.
And just keep an eye on flyers. Like if you get flyers, start always searching through the hardware ones. Eventually you're going to find something on sale. Like if time's not a factor, I would just hold out till you find something on sale.
Which that brings up a point. We mentioned woodworking. So plastic dip is great to give something a rubbery feel. Now, and that what it also does is it seals in it. So for example, the foam board doesn't get water absorption. Make sure you know the material you're working with. Foam board, wood absorbs water. You want to make sure you seal it with something so you don't get swelling and you don't get basically damaged props because of just water damage and humidity. You go to Dragon Con, it's going to be humid and your everything that you're carrying is going to get humidity around. So make sure you take the time to learn the material you're working with and properly take the couple steps to seal them so you don't have to worry about that anymore.
Yeah, like just buying a clear coat and spraying everything afterwards is going to be worth your time.
Yep, that is probably the easiest way to handle a lot of it. The thing about clear coat that you just need to remember is that it does change the final color of your prop that you're
wearing. Yeah, so if the color is a really big thing, you might want to just practice on a scrap piece, paint it, and then clear coat it and see what does to the color.
Experiment. Always be experimenting to achieve the look you want to achieve.
And yes, a big thing, too, is you can also roll with the punches, too. Like, one of the first times I used the Leak Seal, I didn't realize that I needed to, like, spray off the first bit. Because, like, it comes out gunky for the first couple seconds. While I was spraying, like, my shoulder piece that I made out of foam, it left, like, this weird texture. Well, afterwards, I just painted it red so it looked like I had blood stains on my armor. Sometimes, if something goes wrong, don't worry about it. Just turn in the battle damage later. That's 90% of the time when I screw something up, I just turn in the battle damage later. So mistakes aren't bad.
If you slip on a Dremel, oh, look, battle damage.
Battle damage will explain a lot of stuff away.
Now, with that, something else that I've done in the past and that I've seen conventions doing is if you have a booth, for example, it might be a good thing to do. If one of your ship members happened to move recently, they should have a lot of cardboard. I have more cardboard than I can ever count at my house. But bring it to a convention, make a cardboard armor. So even if you just want to do something to pattern it out, try it once. Make it out of cardboard, old boxes, whatever. It'll look funny. It's not going to be screen accurate, but it'll be a fun costume to wear.
And it's a good way to test the sizes. Like if you don't have cardboard, at least around where I am at the dollar store, you can buy a sheet of like poster board for $1, $1.50, and just cut out the shapes and put them together and see how they fit before you cut it all out in foam.
Yeah, that's a prime example. Awesome.
A lot of costumers recommend getting some sort of large paper to model your costume out of paper or cardboard or whatever before you ever start cutting the fabric that's a little bit more expensive.
So almost at any hardware store, you can find, it's usually in the painting section. It's a big roll of brown paper. It's commonly used to cover the floor when you're painting. That stuff is great to do a generic pattern on.
We've managed to find a lot of that brown paper at framing stores. The glass that they're getting is wrapped in this stuff. And if you can talk to them ahead of time, you can get them to save the paper. And otherwise, they'd be throwing it away.
With Klingons being a very vinyl and leather heavy costume, most of it was vinyl. Everything on screen was vinyl. Talk to your local shop. Even if they're not a costume shop or a prop shop or a hardware shop, there's a local car detailer. Not detailer, like they do like fancy internal stuff in the cars, change your seats out and all that. I go to them every so often if I need some vinyl and go, hey, do you guys have any leftover brown vinyl or gray vinyl? And almost always I either get leather or like car seat leather or car seat vinyl at extremely discounted price because it scraps to them. They can't use it. or for free because they're about to throw it out.
Yeah, one of the fabric stores chains that went out of business recently used to have huge vinyl scraps, vinyl end cuts that they were selling at $5 a yard, a ridiculously cheap price for vinyl.
Yeah, and that's the other thing is almost every type of fabric store, craft store, any of them, will have a clearance red tag section. The name may change based on where you're at. A local one to me is Joann's, and they have a huge red tag shelf, and I will buy probably like $200 worth of stuff there for $50. So again, it's not all about getting that 100% accurate material. A great thing about Klingons is we have, what, 5-6 shows, if not more, to go off of for uniforms.
And they didn't even use the same, they didn't even have a uniform in any particular show.
Yeah, so you got basically original series, which was all the same kind of stuff. And then Next Generation was very similar. But, I mean, once you start getting farther out, you start seeing more and more divergence. Because they're not mass producing this stuff for a lot of background characters. So you have, for Deep Space Nine, you have that episode where Martok takes over the Bird of Prey. They have a ton of different variations to their uniform. Then you go into Enterprise era, and basically every costume is different. So, I mean, don't think that you have to look exactly like that one specific character, because it's not always going to be that one specific character that you're going to be able to emulate.
Unless you want to be that one specific character, then go for it.
Definitely. If you are trying to look like Markov, go for it.
You can find lots of different angles on Captain Krug from Star Trek 3, but you don't have to go that route. I mean, Star Trek 6 went to a whole different way of doing the uniforms.
And now, I'm going on that aspect. We see a lot of variations. So going to the people who don't fit the typical build. So we have a lot of members who are wheelchair bound or scooter bound because they are, there's just something that needs them to be that way. There's a lot of things you can do to just spruce up that even. I've seen a lot of scooters that are now little birds of prey or little D7 ships.
It doesn't take a whole lot. You just need a couple of wings and a front piece, and you can turn those scooters into something that's real cute, real cool.
I personally have a service dog, and with my service dog, we're working on making her a couple costumes. We're going to make her a TARDIS costume, a couple Federation costumes, things like that, just because it's a way to spruce it up and make it a little bit more fun. So,
and look for interesting things you can do, because like you're talking about taking your dog and doing a Targ costume. But down here, we've talked about the idea of casting and having available as something to give to people. A Targ tooth, your first kill as a Klingon, your first Targ, you've taken one of the teeth and mounted it on a chain. So we're casting raptor teeth to make him into Targ teeth.
Nice.
Yeah, so there's a lot of things you can do. There was a costume actually a while back, and I do not know who did it, but it was Toby the Targ, and it was basically a furry-style suit that was a Targ, and it was awesome looking.
Don't limit yourself. Don't handicap yourself. There's all kinds of things you can do. If you don't want to do costumes and you just want to do Klingon crafts, well, there's a couple of Klingon games out there you can work on designing. Klingzah has got an up and the pieces that you can make. There's Klingon Scrabble out there.
There's a whole Klingon language.
Also, if you can get images that you like, that you want to transfer to something, you can use something called, what is it, Mod Podge, and you can adhere these images down to, say, magnets or platters or bowls or, you know, some sort of thing that you can do to add color to whatever it is you're trying to do.
Now, the lovely part about the day we're living in is progressing even more, is cosplay and costuming is becoming a norm. We're no longer that off group that, oh, look, there's a sci-fi convention. We're not that anymore. It's becoming a lot more mainstream, which means that a lot more companies and a lot more organizations are supporting it. So while there are the ways of going to the hardware store, I swear I've told my hardware store the weirdest things. I was working on a prop from Fallout. It's a little prop of a mini nuke, is what it was called. So I was in the screw section trying to find the right screws. And trust me, you will say the weirdest stuff. So what you making this time? I am making a bomb. And that's the first thing that came out of my mouth without even thinking about it. I was not making a real bomb. I was just getting some screws for this. And then I explained to him because I don't want to get arrested. There's a ton of different things that you can make and a ton of different places you can buy stuff. So don't limit yourself to one material. The foam that we're talking about, most of the time people use what's called EVA foam. EVA is a type of foam Most of the time, you'll find that as anti-fatigue mats. You'll find wood, you'll find screws, you'll find plastics, resins, 3D print, wood, vinyl, leather. We can go all day, every day about what type of material to use. So don't think you have to do it one certain way either.
And like he was talking about, if you can find a store, hardware store, fabric store, whatever, and you've got somebody in that store that knows what you're doing and likes what you're doing, they are an asset for you to finding new stuff that you never thought to use.
Last time I was in the hardware store looking for something, the guy's like, well, I tell him what I was, that I was looking for scroll saw blades. He's like, oh, what are you doing with that? I'm like, I'm making a 3D chest cupcake stand. Just looked at me and went, I don't know what to help you there.
So, yeah, I have one hardware store. People who are into the Halo video games, the guy makes costumes for that. He works at that store. So if I'm looking for something that is related to that, I'll go there in a heartbeat because he'll know exactly what I'm talking about. There's another hardware store that we go to second that this guy sees us. So what Star Wars prop are you making this time? It doesn't matter what I'm making. It's Star Wars to him.
But that's the kind of guys you need because they're going to have ideas. They're going to know the new inventory that's coming in, and they can suggest things to you.
Yeah, so some of these people don't know, probably don't care exactly what you're making, but they are have an idea of ways to make it. And some of the people that you talk to, they're going to be the typical, oh, you should only make these things. They're going to be the typical what you expect to find at a hardware store. But then you have these guys who go, oh, that's interesting. Have you thought about doing it this way? Going into 3D printing, we met one guy at a hardware store who worked there. He actually was one of the people who invented what is now modernly known as ABS. He worked for whatever company that was. And I don't know all that in details. But I was able to, without even him knowing 3D printing technology, he was able to associate with it because he knew what I was talking about, even at the very simplest concept.
And if we talk about molding and casting in, say, resin or foam or whatever material, but if we talk about molding props, you can make a clay model of a prop that you want to do, make a mold of it, and then cast it into any other material that you want. You can take two divergent types of materials, glue them together, make a mold. They'll end up being cast as a single piece when you're done. So lots of materials are available out there.
I do want to bring up, since you brought up clay and molding, one thing about molding is you normally make a mold out of silicone. There is other materials you can use, but I'm just going to use silicone here. Silicone is affected by certain materials. Latex is one of them, as is sulfur. So if you're making a mold for something, make sure you know what material, how that affects your down the road.
If you're going to use clay, it must be sulfur-free clay.
The reason is because if not, you're going to fail that silicone mold. Silicone is expensive too. So you'll be spending a lot of money for a piece that won't work.
But you don't have to go at this alone. If you're going to look at doing molding and casting, there's a company out there called Smooth-On that has videos available that you can go and watch and learn how to do what you want to do. And they're very happy to talk to you about materials to do it with.
Yes, Smooth-On is an amazing company. Again, you can look at a couple companies, Punish Props, like we mentioned before. I think Evil Ted might even have a couple things on molding. There is tons of people out there that you can watch molding videos on. At some point, more people will pop up, because it's just a matter of time to get things recorded. There are tons of them out there now, and you can find out a lot with YouTube. If you don't understand something with Smooth-On, if you call them, more often than not, they will basically tell you what to use for your project.
They also have lots of seminars available too. Yes. So depending on where you live, you might be able to find a seminar in your area that you can go to and spend a day hands-on learning how to do it.
Correct. We all started somewhere. I know that the first time I tried to silicone mold something, I used typical craft clay, and that silicone was garbage. It was a mistake I made from the heartbeat. That's why I make sure I bring that up. Everybody is going to make these mistakes. You're not going to know everything. If you think about working with a material, go learn the material first. I can't emphasize that enough. I know I brought it up before, but I'm going to probably bring it up another three times. Know what you're working with. Know how it works. Know the tool that you're working with, because it does affect your final product.
And practice, practice, practice.
Yep. So we started bringing up clay and silicone and casting and molding or silicone molding and casting. What other tools do you guys work with? I know we brought up saws, but is there any other tools that you guys work with?
I use that belt sander quite heavily, and I've got different types of sanding devices so that I can bring my finished product down to the texture that I want to get it to.
Kind of depends on what I'm working with and what I want to finish with. Like, I got the scroll saw, jigsaw, table saw, but that's mostly for woodworking. I don't use a lot of that for foam. For foam, I usually just use my knife, my carpentry knife. As far as sanding, I got this, like a palm sander and handheld disc sander. But if I'm working with the foam, I don't like to use those because it kind of tears it up. So usually I just sand it by hand. But for wood, I use all the power tools.
To cut the PVC to make the pain sticks, I actually do use a table saw because it's quick and I just need to make a straight cut.
So on top of that, I also used a 3D printer, vinyl cutter, and stuff like that. 3D printing now, we've mentioned that in kind of vagueness here a few times. To explain what 3D printing is for anybody who doesn't know, is there's a couple of techniques of how it's worked, but almost everyone does the same thing. It takes material and does layer by layer, builds up a model. And there's other ways of doing it, but this is the common 3D printing. It's known as FDM. It takes plastic and melts a layer, goes up a layer, melts a layer, and does it over and over and over until you have a model. Just like anything, this is just one tool to do something. It is not the best way to do it. It is not the worst way to do it. There is no best. There is no worst.
But with 3D printing today, there are several sites out there on the web that you can pull down the file that you need, because the hardest part of 3D printing is designing the piece that you want to print. The equipment is almost plug and play today.
Correct.
If you go out to like, what are some of the websites out there?
So first and foremost, you have a couple sites in general. Now, we do have some great modelers in CAG itself. So if you go to CAG.org, you're seeing that we are starting to post more and more 3D models up throughout time. So there is that for some going on models. Outside of CAG, you have a website called Thingiverse, which link will be below, and My Mini Factory. Both of these work off of the Creative Commons license. So you'll have people who will go in and 3D model stuff. They will post these on these websites and allow you to download their model and print it under certain restrictions and under a certain license. So first, make sure you follow them license. I've had a lot of great files off of there. I get sent one probably every other day asking if I can print it. The way that a 3D printer gets the data is called a G-code, which is just commands to the machine. But what it does is it takes a 3D model, similar, not exactly the same, similar to what you will see in a video game or a CGI animation. And it will break that down into what the machine needs to print it. So you can't just go and send somebody a photo saying, can you 3D print this? It doesn't work that way. It's a little bit more complex than that. But luckily, there is a lot of great modelers out in the world who are printing stuff that they like. And since cosplay is becoming a lot bigger, a lot of these people do this stuff for cosplay.
And if you've got the patience to do it, there's literally open source software that you can get to design 3D models to go for the 3D printers.
Correct. And that is actually a very big field growing. For commission work, I will admit, I suck at 3D modeling. I'm working on it, but I'm not there yet. I work with a modeler. The company name is Obsidian Props. If I ever need a model, I go straight to them. I'll have a link to her Facebook page, by the way, in the description. But if you need a model and you can't find it and you can't make it, you can go to somebody. But you have to pay for it just like anything else. So if you can learn to do that, beyond not having to pay for it, you can make money off. Somebody who is young and trying to find a career, 3D modeling is a great place to start to go into a career. 3D modeling, you can get anywhere from Pixar to Universal to make Star Trek movie to video game companies. I mean, you name it, that's 3D modeling is a place to be if you like that kind of stuff.
Remember, we can take 3D modeling, 3D printing to another level too. They have taken a 3D printer up to the International Space Station to print parts for the International Space Station.
Correct. Now, there is limitations of what you can print and cannot print based off of modern technology. But printers are basically the replicators of today.
And if you can find that makerspace that Dan was talking about earlier, they may have other tools that you can look at using. There's one down here in Orlando that I haven't had a chance to join yet. But I know they've also got laser cutters, CNC machines, and vacuform tables, in addition to a lot of other stuff that is fun to use.
Yeah. A laser cutter is great. We say laser cutter. These can also be known as laser engravers. They are great for carving, doing designs. So if you're looking at doing the Sword of Kalos, which has a lot of that fancy engraving, you can do the model, cut it out of wood, and then line it upright so that you will actually can laser engrave it instead of trying to hand engrave.
Actually, you can take it a step further. You put the wood in as a board. The laser engraver will put your engraving in. When it is done engraving, it will then cut the sword out for you.
Yeah, you want to make sure that you're using the right type of material. Laser cutters do melt, so you want to be careful that you don't use the chemical release and stuff like that. But again, this is knowing your tool and knowing your materials.
In fact, if you tried to use metal, most metals in a laser cutter, it will reflect the light and probably do a lot of hazard to you and the people around you.
Correct. PVC is another one that's a no-no.
The gases from the PVC material.
Yep. They're toxic, actually.
But there'll be a list. Whatever printer you get, whatever printer you're using, they will have a list of materials that can and cannot be used.
Yes. If you go to Makerspace, one of the Makerspace staff or members will tell you very clearly what you can and can't do with these stuff, because they don't want to see it broken and they don't want to die.
If they haven't made you go through a class first.
Correct. Now, both a laser cutter and laser engraver and a 3D printer are tools known as CNC tools. They are, I can't remember what that CNC acronym stands for, but they're computer operated tools. You put in a design.
Control.
Thank you. But them are only the beginning to that. We also have CNC routers, CNC mills, CNC water jets. These tools basically where the computer will do 95% of your work for you. Knowing how to operate the tool is the main thing. For example, the Makerspace I'm part of has a $10,000 CNC router. If you use this router wrong, that bit can shoot across the room and kill someone. So again, I hate to be the broken record, but know your tools, know how to use them.
If you want to look for a cheap CNC thing that you can get involved in and learn how it kind of goes, a lot of the craft stores have what's known as vinyl cutters. They will take an image and cut it out of a piece of vinyl that you can transfer to, say, the back window of your car.
My Klingon logo on the back window of my car is made from my vinyl cutter, actually. The two big brands that you will see, at least in the States, are known as the Silhouette Cameo and the Cricut. C-I-R-C-U-T, I think.
I know Michaels carries the Cricut. I think Hobby Lobby carries the Cricut. It's all over the place.
Correct. And I'm saying in the States because that's where I'm from. So if you're outside the States, have fun finding your brand.
Well, if you're outside the States and you can't find what it is we mention on this podcast, put it in the comments section and somebody else will now have access to you found out.
Correct. And that's a great way. So you'll find them. On top of that, don't rule out simple or what we consider simple nowadays. I use decals left and right for items that were printed with sticker paper on a normal inkjet printer. Just because it seems simple does not mean it's the wrong way of doing it.
Sometimes if you can find paper, yes, you can print just about anything you want on decal paper. There's also a spray finish you have to put on over it when you're done. A friend of mine couldn't find a lot of decals for the models that he was making because he was big into World War II German and Russian tanks, and he wanted specific decals for them that weren't in the kits that they came with. So he would print his own on this decal paper. And yeah, it's just an inkjet printer.
Yeah, the main thing with that is look at the paper you're buying. Make sure it's for the type of printer you have. I speak from
my experience.
And make
sure you got the template and software to go with it.
Correct. I have bought more than once, and more than as recently as I want to admit, have bought paper that is for laser printers only, not realizing it was for a laser printer.
And the two technologies are wildly different, so you can't just go and use the paper interchangeably.
So this goes back to know your material. Every prop maker will say it over and over. Know your material, know what you're doing, expect to fail.
And by the same token, when you start learning your material and you start knowing that material, you will find new ways to use that material that you didn't even consider before.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. My wife actually just looked at me, basically made a motion that I was repeating myself. But the reason that I know that there's a difference in laser and inkjet printers isn't because I magically knew it. I made that mistake. A lot of what you learn isn't just because of what you did right. A lot of what you learn is because you did something wrong. We live in a society now that at times you look at things and somebody does something wrong and they're ridiculed. That's not what you should be. As a crafter, as a maker, the old saying is Thomas Edison asked why it took him 1,000 times to make a light bulb. And I think the response is, no, I learned 1,000 ways how not to make a light bulb. So just because you make a mistake doesn't mean it's the end of the world. Keep going. Try again. Every profession you worked in, I'm sure that Korg will say how many times he's messed up a computer thing in the past. I can say it for my props. No matter what field you're in, you will make a mistake. Keep going on. Try to improve yourself.
And like you said earlier, the only way you really learn is through making mistakes, is through trying something and it failed. The scientific method is all about coming up with a statement, coming up with an idea, and trying to prove that statement wrong, trying to make that idea fail.
You'll learn more from failing.
Yeah, with scientific method, it's all a matter of, it's when you can't make your idea fail that now you've got your theory.
Correct. And me and my wife, she helps me with a lot of my stuff. We know a lot more what not to do, which if you know what not to do, it helps you know what to do, because we have looked at a project or cut ourselves or mess up on a project, or just ruin that really fancy
material.
You
learn your limits.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing. Safety is key, and I've been harping that. If you are working with tools that are sharp, do not expect you never to get cut. You will get cut. The goal with safety is to keep that cut down to a minimum. And I use knives in that example, or bladed objects. If you're working with heat guns or hot glue, you will get burned. It's part of making a mistake. But if you know how to use your tool, you will keep that down to a minimal. Let's hope that you never cut yourself on a table saw.
One of the things I like about Harbor Freight is I can go there and I can buy large packages of safety equipment that I'm going to use when I'm in the workshop. Packages of gloves, packages of masks, easy packages of eye protection.
Yes.
Protective equipment is always important.
I mentioned getting cut. If it's a minor cut, your skin will heal. Jordan brings up a perfect concept. If you're working with power tools, wear safety equipment. Wear your eye goggles. You only have one set of eyes, and they don't heal very easily. If you're working with stuff that shoots dust up into the air, wear a protective mask.
If you're dealing with resin, and you start sanding the resin, it will kick up a magnitude more dust than wood will kick up when you start sanding it.
So respirators, dust masks, eye protection. When you're working with all that, you make sure you wear them. When you're working with spray paints, make sure you have a respirator on. Then particles get in your lungs and do not come out.
Well-ventilated spaces. Can't emphasize that enough. Those fumes will accumulate and get to you.
I will say that I have had more than once that little bit of a woozy contact high from doing a little bit too much spray painting in that little bit too small of a room.
Yeah. One thing I do for spray painting, if people are hard up for spots to actually paint, is I bought like one of those large moving boxes, cut out one of the panels, and now I have a little booth I can spray paint in. I just move it outside. Helps keep the dust off of it. And, you know, if there's a little bit of wind, you could block the wind by putting the spray can inside the box with the thing.
Well, like Dan mentioned earlier, with cardboard, if you get any major appliance, keep the box, because now you've got a workstation. You've got an environment that you can put your stuff in and not ruin your entire garage.
Yes, I just got new cabinets in my workshop with counter space on it. And that counter space is nice. There's times that I have to take my airbrush down there and work on something in that area because it's hard to move or whatnot. And trust me, I will lay down cardboard. I will lay down paper. While yes, you can repaint walls and stuff like that, it's a lot easier if you just don't have to. So taking that extra 5 minutes to lay down that paper or lay down that cardboard saves you hours of work later.
And like I say, you get a box big enough and you can actually just work in that box. You put the box on the table, put your stuff inside the box, and just work inside the box. But
yep,
keep in mind, ventilation.
Yes. So you can find a lot of videos on, we're talking about spray painting mostly here. You can find a ton of videos on how to make a safe spray booth that has a filtration system built in for cheap on YouTube.
I was going to say the guy from X Robots has a video on making a painting booth.
Yeah, X Robots is a good one too. But even if you find a video on YouTube, remember it's YouTube. You find a good video, do a little bit of research and see what other people think about it. I can tell you how to make a nuclear reactor. I can tell you, right, or at least I can act like I can tell you and put it on YouTube.
Trust me. I've got a science degree. I can tell you how to do it. I just can't get the stuff to do it with. They won't give me the uranium. It's like Sheldon.
On a side note, you can buy uranium on Amazon.
Not the right kind of uranium.
Yeah. That's the important thing.
Doc Brown seemed to get a lot of it.
Doc Brown was working with terrorists.
That's how he got a lot of it.
And that's another thing. If you can't find something locally...
Don't work with terrorists to get it.
Yes, don't work with terrorists to get it, but you can find a lot of stuff online. Another type of material we haven't mentioned too much, it's called thermoplastics. Plastic you heat up and it'll shape itself.
Remember that heat gun? Here's where you can use that heat gun.
Yes.
Now, friendly plastic is a thermoplastic, right?
Same degree, yes. The types that I'm more talking about are like sheets of thermoplastic, similar to Warbla or...
Yeah, Warbla is a big one they talk about.
Yeah, I was just thinking friendly plastic's a good one to build teeth out of. If you want to get some of those nasty Klingon teeth, you can get some friendly plastic and just like mold it over your gum line and then attach teeth to it.
Yes, friendly plastic is a type of plastic and it's actually been tested in some manner to be determined to be food safe, which means that it can be put in your mouth. I don't recommend doing that with Warbla.
No, Warbla requires a lot more work to get it to work. I think you have to do three layers of it, some different material in the center.
It depends on how you're doing it. But again, there's a ton of tutorial videos out there with Warbla and other thermoplastics. Warbla is just basically the name brand. You talk about a rotary tool, you normally call it a Dremel, even though Dremel is a brand name. Warbla is becoming the name for thermoplastic sheet.
And here's a good tip, too. If you find a company that has the material that you want to use, ask them how to use it, because the more they teach you how to use it, the more they can sell you the material to be used.
I locally sell Warbla as a and I will tell you right now, I have taught classes where the classes were where I basically have given away small amounts of Warbla to teach people, because I knew that they would come back and buy Warbla from me. And I can guarantee you, almost any manufacturer or any retailer who sells these type of products will want you to buy more from them, so they're willing to teach you how to use it.
We talked earlier about SmoothOn offering classes on how to use their stuff. Well, the more they teach you how to use it, the more they'll sell you.
Yeah, another good YouTube channel is Brick in the Yard. They're another company that sells resin products. They'll teach you exactly how to make whatever they're showing you how to make on their videos, but they'll use their products because now you know how to use their products.
If you're just looking for generic molding and casting materials, go to your local craft stores, your local art supply stores, see what they carry. Well, because they're carrying it. You don't have to go online to get it if you can learn to use their materials. They might have a place where you can go and learn how to do it in addition to just carrying it.
Going back to SmoothOn, because I know they do this, there's a store local to me called Plaza Art. I don't know how far they go out, but Plaza Art is a carrier of SmoothOn, which one of the things they have are samples. Not that you can buy and use, but like after it's already cast or the material is cured.
They're little tiny discs that they've made cast molds of, so you can get a feel for how the final product is going to look and feel when you're done working with it. We have one of the Reynolds supply stores down here in Orlando.
Oh, lucky you. I have to have them shipped to me.
I love having them down here.
When we're talking about SmoothOn, their online retailer is Reynolds Advanced here, or RAM. The guys are great, but you're looking at, for a 2-gallon thing, something that weighs 20 pounds. Now, that shipping just gets expensive. If you can buy it locally, you save on shipping.
Well, there's also a thing, too. In Omaha, Dick Blick, the art supplier, would carry the SmoothOn small sample size stuff. But Dick Blick would also give me coupons so I could buy it at a really good discount. It would save me money.
Yeah. Okay.
What was the person's name again?
It's not a person. It's a store. Dick Blick.
Oh, okay. I'm like, that's an unfortunate name.
That's what they call themselves.
So I've heard of Dick Blick, and I don't know how they survived with that kind of name.
Like, that would suck to be at school and be called that. Like, the other kids? Oh.
Well, I think it goes back to that Saturday Night Live routine back from the 70s. With a name like Schmuckers, you know it has to be good.
Well, I don't know if we want to keep this part in the podcast, but you guys should watch the videos on deck protection. Oh, the videos are called Key of Awesome, but they did some fake commercials. And some of them are on deck hardeners. And it's all in an Australian accent.
What was the name of that again?
Key of Awesome.
Key of Awesome.
Yes. And then look up their deck hardener promotion.
And that wraps up our overview of prop creation. We look forward to hearing your opinions as to what you would like us to talk about, what guests you would like us to bring on, what topics you would like to hear in the future. Thank you and good night.